gopi jana balava girimana gari gopi jana balava girimana gari Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tera Banachari Yamuna Tera Banachari Ojaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Nitya Lila Pravista Askataro Satasi Simanis Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Jai Premisakoho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Pravintananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaura Bhaktivedanta Jai Sri Sri Radha Shama Sunda Gopa Gopi Nata Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Gita Govardhan Ki Jai Granta Raj Shumad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Sri Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai Gaura Premanandi All glories to the Assembled Devotees All glories to the Assembled Devotees All glories to the Assembled Devotees All glories to the Lotus Seed of Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, fifth chapter, text number 14. I've mentioned this before, this is one of the nice sections of the Bhagavatam because we can actually research and listen to classes Prabhupada spoke on these particular verses, and this is one of those verses. So it's always nice to get Prabhupada's perspective on a particular verse aside from his purport when he was actually speaking publicly. So you can go to prabhupadvani.org and find those classes listed. I'm just going to go through the Sanskrit. Tatonyata kenchinayad vivakshata pritag drisastat kripa pritag drisastat krita rupa namabi nakar hichitvapi chadushtita matir labetavata hatana vivashpadam tata from that anyata apart kinchana something yet whatsoever vivakshata desiring to describe prita separately drisha vision tatkrita reactionary to that rupa form namabi by names na karhichit never kvapi any cha and dushtita mati oscillating mind Interesting. Labeta, gains. Vata data, vata ahata. Troubled by the wind. No, boat. Eva, like. Ashpadam, place. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Whatever you desire to describe that is separate in vision from the Lord simply reacts with different forms, names, and results to agitate the mind. As the wind agitates a boat which has no resting place. I like the word for word and how Prabhupada puts that into the actual translation, the oscillating mind. We all know everybody wants an oscillating fan. You don't want a direct fan. You want an oscillating fan. So in that case, you want that movement. Oscillating fan means it goes back and forth, back and forth. Oh, that's much better. In the mind, it's exactly the opposite. We don't want the mind going back and forth, back and forth. We want the mind to be fixed. Poor poet by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Vyasadeva is the editor of all descriptions of the Vedic literatures, and thus he has described transcendental realization in different ways, namely by fruitive activities, speculative knowledge, mystic power, and devotional service. Besides that, in his various Puranas, he has recommended the worship of so many demigods in different forms and names. The result is that people in general are puzzled how to fix their minds in the service of the Lord. They are always disturbed about finding the real path of self-realization. Srila Narada Dev is stressing this particular defect in the Vedic literatures compiled by Vyasadeva. And thus he is trying to emphasize describing everything in relation with the Supreme Lord and no one else. In fact, there is nothing existent except the Lord. The Lord is manifested in different expansions. He is the root of the complete tree. He is the stomach of the complete body. Pouring water on the root is the right process to water the tree, as much as feeding the stomach supplies energy to all parts of the body. Therefore, Srila Vyasadeva should not have compiled any Puranas other than the Bhagavad Purana, because a slight deviation from that may create havoc for self-realization. If a slight deviation can create such havoc, then what to speak of deliberate expansion of the ideas separate from the absolute truth, personality of Godhead. The most defective part of the worship of demigods is that it creates a definitive conception of pantheism, ending disastrously in many religious sects detrimental to the progress of the principles of the Bhagavatam, which alone can give the accurate description for self-realization in the eternal relation with the personality of Godhead by devotional service and transcendental love. That's a long sentence that is really packed with information. The example of the boat disturbed by whirling winds is suitable in this respect. The diverted mind of the pantheist can never reach the perfection of self-realization due to the disturbed condition of the selection of object. Om jnana tamarandasya jnanjana shilakaya chaksu unmritam mena tasmai sri gurave namaha mukam karoti vachalam bhangumlam jayati girim yakripatamaham vande sri gurum dinitharinam vancha kalpaturibhyas japipa sindhubaheva cha patitanam pavanibhyo vashnabhyo namo namaha jayasi krishna chaitanya prabhu nitananda sri advaita sikadar bhavasavasvi gaura bhakti vinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So many of us have spent a great deal of time listening to, from home, to the Nitya Bhagavata Sevaya, to the eternal recitation of the Bhagavatam. And now we find that almost all of us have to do that. So it's a chance for one half to see how the other half has been living. Interesting point there. Kind of reminds me of the Vaishnava Charya classes I did for a while on Monday nights. I had about the same number of people in the class as this, because everybody listened online, it would be recorded, whatever. So this is an opportunity for us to reach deeper in. If we listen to any of the individuals that are putting out recorded classes on the different social media platforms, and any of the advice given by devotees, this is the time that's recommended for going more internal, for going deeper into ourselves. As Prabhupada said, so many activities I have to create for you passionate boys and girls. As many of these activities come to a grinding halt, this is an opportunity for us to go more internal. So, having said that, I do feel it's necessary to express a bit of discomfort at being here, particularly this week. I listened to Nagaraj's class on Monday, and as I listened to it, I thought to myself, simply brilliant. It was just astounding. And then Tuesday, I listened to Sesha's class, And I heard him bring in a unique style of presentation. It was innovative and completely refreshing. And that caused me to think, who am I to sit in the same week as these great exalted Vaishnavas and speak on the Bhagavatam? My realizations on the Bhagavatam are paltry, and my understanding of the depth of the Bhagavatam is exactly the opposite, very shallow. But we each have our service to Prabhupada, we have our service to the community, and ultimately we have our service to the Bhagavat itself. So somehow or another we trudge forward with the blessings of the Vaishnavas in this effort. It makes me appreciate even more the verse of Sanatana Goswami, Mandeka Bandhu Matsangim Mad Guru Man Mahadana Man Nishtaraka Mad Bhagya Madananda Namostute. My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisance is to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. So this chapter we're reading, it introduces us to the idea of the guru, Narada, chastising, instructing, and of course encouraging the disciple, Vyasadeva. In the first verse, we see the position, the first verse of this chapter, we see the position of both of them being described in exalted language. Narada, he is described as the sage amongst the gods, the Deva Rishi. This word Deva Rishi indicates Deva, the topmost of the gods, Rishi of sages. So, such an exalted position. So many advanced persons in the higher realms of human existence. And amongst all of those, we have very advanced and exalted demigods. And amongst all of those, Narada is considered to be the topmost amongst the sages in that group. And then Vyasadeva, he's described as Rishi among the Brahmanas. The Sanskrit dictionary notes that Rishi refers to one who is accomplished and enlightened, and one who reaches beyond this mundane world by means of spiritual knowledge. Though this is the purpose of a Rishi, they have to have some accomplishment in what they're doing, what efforts they're putting forth in their service, and they have to be enlightened to be able to execute that. And what is that service? To reach beyond the mundane world by the spiritual knowledge they've received. So this is the glorification given to Vyasadeva. So very flowery words, which appear to almost be dismissed by Narada in what might be viewed as a somewhat sarcastic statement to Vyasadeva right off the bat. So he says to him, are you satisfied by identifying with the body and mind as objects of self-realization? Now, a phrase like that, it can be seen in two ways, and how it would be seen would depend entirely upon the tone. Sometimes guys have this way of sarcastically cutting each other. You know, so I don't know if the ladies do this, but I know the guys do it a lot. You know, just a particular statement said in a certain dismissive way, just for the purpose of, you know, cutting somebody else. So now, of course, the flip side of that is, as a loving guru, looking at a mistake that's made by his disciple and asking him, has this mistake justified you? Of course, in the context of Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand which is this is. Narada has no business to sarcastically criticize Vyasadeva, despite the fact that those of us that identify with this male body enjoy great pleasure in doing that to each other. But Narada here, he has a completely different motive. And because, as Prabhupada points out in the purport of that same verse, one cannot be satisfied unless one is factually seated in self-realization, which is transcendental to the material body and mind. So the purpose of Vyasadeva producing all of this vast storehouse of Vedic knowledge is for the purpose of self-realization. But Narada asked him, after seeing what he's done and what he's written, he asked him, are you satisfied by identifying the body and mind as the very objects of self-realization? Because Prabhupada's pointing out here that that is a disqualification for being transcendentally situated. This is something even a first-year bhakta knows right off the bat. You know, this is, we teach them right from the beginning when someone comes to Krishna consciousness, you know. If you're going to identify as the body, if you're going to identify as the mind, you won't be able to be situated nicely and peacefully in self-realization. As the Bhagavad Gita says, one can't execute devotional activities without being peaceful in the mind. So that peace and steadiness, that non-oscillating, you have a setting on these fans I was describing, oscillating and non-oscillating, on and off. So you can have it constantly moving, or you can have it steadily. As I said, with a fan, we want it to be moving so that the flow is constantly there. The exact polar opposite of how we want the mind. We want the mind to be non-oscillating, to be fixed and steady, because then it can be peaceful. And by that peace, then we can begin to understand transcendental self-realization. So, Narada continues. You've fulfilled your task. You've prepared a great and wonderful work. You've spoken on Brahman and on the knowledge that goes with it. So, as the spiritual master, he's appreciating what the disciple has done. Not just there to criticize. This is the nature of the materialist. Always criticize something else. Always find some fault with something else. This is a defect that we have in our conditioned state. We're hard-pressed to find the good fortune in others, to find the good quality in others. So Narada isn't like that. Narada says, you did your task. You were given the task of washing the pots, and I went into the kitchen afterwards, and all the pots are very nicely clean and stacked up on the shelves, and they go, thank you very much. So he's appreciating the task slightly more than washing pots, but he's appreciating the task of what Vyasadeva has done. And he says, it's a great and wonderful work. You did a fabulous job at it. But has it fulfilled you? This is where he goes next. He says, why are you feeling despondent? You were given a service. You did it very nicely. But yet you're feeling despondent. What is the reason for that? And in that verse, Prabhupada chooses to use the translation on the word that we use in everyday life. That shows a very genuine and true mood of loving concern for his disciple. The translation at the end of that second verse is, third verse, is, my dear Prabhu. So he says like that. He says, you have fulfilled your task. You've prepared a great and wonderful work. You've spoken on Brahman and all the knowledge that goes with it. Why are you despondent, my dear Prabhu? We use that word, 100 times a day. Prabhu this, Prabhu that, Prabhu here, Prabhu there, Prabhu went there. But do we really understand the mood that goes with that word? And here, Prabhupada expands it out of it. This is Prabhupada's unique glory in his translations of Srimad Bhagavatam, is to take a word and understand how to give the real essence that that Sanskrit word carried into the English. So he does it here by expanding that, not just Prabhu, but my dear Prabhu. So this phrasing, my dear Prabhu, has a very sweet and tender concern that one sees is meant clearly for the well-being of the disciple. This isn't a, you know, sarcastic a show by the use of this word. This shows that Narada has some genuine concern for the well-being of his disciple, Vyasadeva. Okay, I gave you a task. You did the task. You completed it very nicely, but you're not feeling very fulfilled. Why is that, my dear Prabhu? So this shows a second side that he's asking his disciple, look within a little bit. What is it that did not fulfill you? Do you see it? If the disciple is not able to answer that, then Narada can take the next step from there. So this mood, this shows a loving exchange between the guru and the disciple. And that has to manifest there in the teachings that are disseminated in order to clear up doubts, in order to clear up confusion, in order to clear up despondency that has manifested and is present in Vyasadeva. Now, all of those teachings, which started maybe 6 or 7 verses ago, make up the sum and substance of this chapter. Narada makes this inquiry, he assesses the disciple, he understands the defect, he points out to the disciple, do you recognize the defect? And then from there, the successive verses in this chapter are him giving the instructions how to overcome that feeling of despondency, and not only how to overcome it, but why it manifested. So this chapter is therefore a very important example of the natural mood and manner that a teacher should use in instructing their disciple. It has to be based in a genuine feeling of concerning love and care. This is how that instruction can be well received. Prabhupada speaks many times on this point. It's just like if a husband and wife join together, there is expected to be a child. But for that to happen, the husband has to be potent and the wife has to be fertile. He says if one is and the other isn't, there'll be no result. So this type of mood, this type of example of giving suitable instructions after assessing what is necessary and being able to receive those instructions is essential in the guru-disciple dynamic. And this is the point being made here in the second verse of this chapter, glorifying the exalted position of these two persons and explaining how they actually have this qualification. One is extremely potent and one is very fertile for receiving that potent input. So this is the proper mood that we have to see between disciples and gurus. Now, Vyasadeva himself, he wasn't unaware that he must have done something incorrect. This was the cause of the despondency. All right, I was given some service by my spiritual master, but I wasn't fulfilled by it. Why wasn't I fulfilled? Back to the example of the pots. Okay, I went in the kitchen, the pots were all dirty. I got them all clean, the kitchen's there, but I'm not feeling satisfied. Why? Well, because the whole time I was thinking of all kinds of material things. So the consciousness there. Yeah. So Vyasadeva is examining within himself. He's enough of an advanced disciple. And of course, we know Srila Vyasadeva to be an incarnation of the personality of God and all, but we're looking at it in a particular scenario here, guru and disciple. So he's enough of an advanced devotee to look within himself and see something's not fulfilled here. Now, many times a disciple would come before Srila Prabhupada having made a mistake, and they may not have known exactly what the mistake was that they made, but they came to Prabhupada understanding something wrong had been done. And for that matter, which of us as a parent have not experienced that mood of the child coming before us in a repentant mood, not exactly clear what they did wrong, but knowing that something is amiss, that they've upset mom and dad, and they've come sincerely wanting to make amends for that. You know, and understand what was the mistake they had made so they can be corrected. So this is not such a foreign thing to those of us as parents, this type of mood. So part of the reason that Vyasadeva was able to understand something was amiss, and what's noted by Prabhupada's unique vision in the very first sentence of this purport is that Vyasadeva is described as an editor. Prabhupada, because he had that vision himself, puts that right out there. Vyasadeva was an editor for the Vedas. Now, too bad Nagarjuna isn't here, but I'm sure he'll relate to this. But part of the job of an editor is to examine, to break down, and even to break apart what has been written to its bare essence and find any fault that may be present there. If you've ever had the opportunity, we'll use the word, to submit an article to Back to Godhead magazine for publication, this is exactly what Nagaraj does. He looks at the article, he examines it, he breaks it down, takes it apart, and sees if there's any fault, and then points that out. Okay, here's what you need to clear up on here. This is the job of any editor. This is why editors are so much appreciated by authors, because they take that and clear it up, you know, make it better. So it's a natural point due to this that Vyasadeva was not unaware that there was something amiss. So both from the disciple point of view, being a sincere disciple and seeing that he's not satisfied with the service, and from the point of view of his prophet as being an editor, he could see something was amiss in what I've written. Now, I'm hardly any kind of a writer. I mean, even calling me a writer would be an extreme exaggeration. But I have occasionally produced some poetry, as immature as it is. And I can always tell when, that's not quite right. I need to work on that. I spend a lot of time when I'm in Vrindavan for Kartik, when I'm sitting in kirtans or visiting different pilgrimage places, and I become moved by a particular situation or scenario or vision or sight, and I write some poetry about it. And as I'm writing it, I'll get to a point where, that's not quite right. I have to examine it and take it apart and rework it. And so, that ability, imagine Vyasadeva has that in such great capacity. So these are all reasons that add to the point of why Vyasadeva was able to understand the despondency that was there in his heart needed to be dealt with. Now, Prabhupada points out in this particular purport, in this verse, that transcendental knowledge is found in four chief ways. One, through fruitive activities, karma. Two, through speculative knowledge, jnana. Three, through mystic power, siddhi. And four, through devotional service, bhakti. So these four avenues are there for developing transcendental knowledge. Now, to our own training, three of those culminate in the fourth one. Because bhakti finishes one's karma. And by bhakti, one's jnana, speculation, is removed. And by bhakti, the futility of siddhi is understood. That bhakti brings about the culmination of all of these things. So this is the highest level that we find in devotional service. Now, in the next part of this purport, Prabhupada goes to a very interesting point. He introduces, he mentions that Vyasadeva has introduced the worship of so many demigods. So many. 33 million to be exact. Some major, some minor, but all are subordinate to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. And this is actually a very interesting point. It's one of the major preaching points in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, that we do not worship the demigods. They are not standalone personalities of on reverence and worship. This was taught by Mahaprabhu, it was taught by Narottam Das Thakur, it's taught by Bhakti Siddhanta, and of course Srila Prabhupada taught this. Excuse me. So it's no wonder that people in general, they find so much confusion over this topic in regards to worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The proper understanding, of course, is that these demigods are subordinate. If one worships Ganesh, one worships Ganesh only with the prasadam of the Personality of Godhead. If one worships Shiva, one worships Shiva only with the prasadam of the Personality of Godhead as his devotee. Vaishnavanam yatha sambhu. These individual demigods, they have potency to award certain benedictions in the process of devotional service. For instance, Lord Shiva is prayed to because he is the protector of the Dham, and he can give love for the Dham. He can give braj bhakti. So the residents of Vrindavan, they worship him for that purpose of removing any obstacle in obtaining love for the Dham, Sri Vrindavan. Not because, oh, you're the greatest thing, God, give me a good wife, give me a good husband, give me lots of wealth, whatever. There was an outside personality, but some Indian Swami that was lecturing on this point, he was asked about by some of his followers, well, Lord Shiva smokes ganja, why can't we? And he said, first of all, does he? He said, that's the first question. He said, but if he does, why should you think you can? And then he began to describe all of the qualifications and activities of Lord Shiva. He said, so if you can do any of those, yes. He said, certainly Lord Shiva is on a high platform, but it does not come from some mere smoking of some substance. The conclusion was, leave the weeds for the cows, engage in devotion. At any rate, so these personalities are not worshipped at the exception of the personality of Godhead in the Gaudiya tradition. They're worshipped strictly as servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So by this point being introduced in the Puranas, as Prabhupada mentions in the purport, it's simply a confusing point. Prabhupada notes that there is always, they are always disturbed in trying to find the path of self-realization, indicating they meaning humanity. Now this is why Narada makes such a point of de-emphasizing demigod worship. I mean, if Vyasadeva is seen as an editor, then Narada can be seen as the editor-in-chief. He's even greater fine-tuning. You know, it goes through the editor, and then it goes up the food chain to the editor-in-chief, who looks at it and says, look, you missed this, this, and this. So Narada is able to see, okay, you've done this, this, and this very nicely, but this emphasis of demigod worship is a problem. So he sees the work, he sees the writing, and stresses the defect. This is from the purport. He stresses the defect of this particular weakness in the presentation. Stress. I mean, we generally don't think of looking at Srila Vyasadeva in this way. The defect of the weakness in his presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam, of the Puranas. But as a caring, loving, spiritual master, Narada establishes the point. There is nothing except Krishna. All of these things will be gone over in the verses coming. This is a very nice chapter. I think it runs up to like 27 verses, something like that. And each one of these verses coming are Narada's instructions on how to further the process of devotional service in our hearts. It's a very good chapter to pay attention to. Now, Prabhupada then uses this point here of not worshiping the demigods and the confusion that demigod worship brings to present two of his most famous analogies. One, the root and the tree, and two, the hand and the stomach. This was, without any doubt, one of Prabhupada's strengths in his preaching, the use of analogies. He was just expert at it. Matter of fact, if you look up in Vani quotes, which I did, 775 regularly used analogies are attributed to Prabhupada's preaching. 775. And how many of us use those same analogies? I mean, this is the foundation upon what we build our preaching on. In my small efforts of preaching at Woodstock, mostly all I do is present analogies. This is due to the highly inebriated state of the attendees there and the fact that they can't grasp much philosophically. But analogies fit. They sit right at home with them. So it's a very classic style of presenting Krishna consciousness that Prabhupada's given us. And these two analogies are probably some of the most important that Prabhupada used. The root and the tree. You can. I have a collection of bonsais. I've been collecting bonsais for, I don't know, since back when I lived in New York. That's some 35 years ago. And some of them are actually 30, 40, 50 years old. At any rate, so if I go to water these trees and I simply pour the water on the leaves of the trees, it's not going to work. And particularly because of the small size, you have to water the root. And then the root has the function of disseminating through its different arteries and branches and extensions all up through the tree itself out to each individual leaf. I see it sometimes. I have this beautiful jasmine plant in my greenhouse that I've had for, I don't know, 20 years. And it gives beautiful, this is the time of year the jasmine come in and just, oh, everything just smells so wonderful. If I don't pay attention and don't water it enough, the leaves start to look very, very droopy. And I'll go on and see, oh, I haven't watered enough. Immediately upon watering, I put the water into the pot and the roots absorb all of that. And within just a few short hours, all the leaves are full and strength and solid again. This is the nature of this analogy the prophet gives. And what is the root of creation? That this particular point Narada makes here, that there is nothing except Krishna. So if we satisfy Krishna as his parts and parcels, just as the leaves are the parts and parcels of the tree, then in the same way, we'll get full satisfaction. Just as that tree that's dwindling because of lack of water receives that water, takes it into the roots and distributes it throughout the entire system, same way, by satisfying Krishna, that also comes. Prabhupada gives the other analogy of the hand feeding the stomach, and he does this sometimes in a very direct way, very simply. You take the food, you put it in the hand, you put it, and sometimes in a humorous way. You don't put it in the ear, you don't put it in the anus. Prabhupada says that in one lecture. Everyone laughs, and he chuckles himself. So the food has a particular place it goes. Now, a child, my sweet, charming little granddaughter, Revati, she's at the point to where she's now beginning to actually get the idea it's got to go in the mouth. Excuse me. Prior to this, you would see pictures of her with avocado in her ear and, you know, cream cheese spread all over her face. Because there's the idea that it's something, but not exact, you know, because the intelligence hasn't come. But once the understanding is, oh, this goes in the mouth, then it goes to the stomach, and then everything becomes... So in the same way, that analogy used to show our connection to satisfying Krishna, and then as his part and parcel, we become very much satisfied. So the simplicity of these analogies is so obvious, but it's so complete in the point that Prabhupada makes on it. Now, next comes what I consider to be an extremely bold statement that none of us would think Prabhupada would dare make. He says, I quote, "Therefore, Srila Vyasadeva should not have compiled any Puranas other than the Bhagavad Purana." Wow. That's a really strong statement. Vyasadeva is the incarnation of God. He's the compiler of all the Vedic literatures, and Prabhupada says, basically, he wasted his time. He should have just done Bhagavad Purana. Now, if we sit back and look for a moment and revisit that verse I gave at the beginning of class from Sanatana Goswami, my only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisance is to you, Srimad Bhagavatam. If we look at that verse, we can understand why Prabhupada makes that statement. Such a bold statement. Shouldn't have done the promise, just do Bhagavad Purana. But Prabhupada gives a further clarification. He doesn't just, because Prabhupada was not in the business of fault finding. That was a waste of your time, without any understanding of why he says that. He finishes that sentence. The first half of the sentence is that. Therefore, Srila Vyasadeva should not have compiled any Puranas other than the Bhagavad Purana. But then he finishes that sentence with, because a slight deviation from that may create havoc for self-realization. A slight deviation from the Puranas as a body can create havoc in self-realization, which is the point he refers to back here again in the worship of the demigods. He continues, if a slight deviation can create such havoc, then what to speak of deliberate expansion of ideas separate from the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead. Here again, referring back to this principle of worshiping demigods, as it breaks down, as Prabhupada goes further into there, is in pantheism, of understanding the presentation of representing nature and all of the different aspects of nature being supreme and so on like that. It becomes just watered down like that. So this is the havoc that Prabhupada speaks about. What is the concern that Prabhupada would say he shouldn't have presented the Vedas? He continues in the next sentence, the most effective part of worshiping demigods is that it creates a definite conception of pantheism ending disastrously in many religious sects detrimental to the progress of the principles of the Bhagavatam. This is a powerful sentence. Seriously, if you're sitting at home and listening to this, pull out your Bhagavatam and look at this. This is a powerful sentence. The most effective part of worshiping demigods is that it creates a definite Definite does not leave any room. Well, maybe it's a... No, definite conception of pantheism, which ends disastrously. It doesn't end, oh, that's a mistake. Oh, it doesn't end like, oh, you should have done... Disastrously. Ends disastrously in many religious sects that are detrimental to the progress of the principles of the Bhagavatam. We see this so much in the world today. So many different religious sects, whether it's in Hinduism or whether it's in Christianity or whatever, all of these different religious sects are detrimental to the essential point of the supremacy of the personality of Godhead, particularly as presented in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So simply put, demigod worship will destroy the principles of the Bhagavatam supremacy. The idea that there are many lower jivas, that they have a position akin to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, diminishes the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. I mean, to compare Uddhava Gita and Gopi Gita, which are such essential parts of the Bhagavatam, so something is, I don't know, say Indra Gita or Ganesh Gita. You know, it's the height of foolishness. These particular works of the Bhagavatam are the culmination of how we can understand the worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So why is this a problem? It's a reasonable question to ask. Why is this a problem? Prabhupada answers, continuing on, very, very strongly. The Bhagavatam alone can give the accurate direction for self-realization in the eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead by devotional service and transcendental love. So these three quotes here that I've separated, this is that collective sentence that I mentioned in the purport that was so powerful. The Bhagavatam alone can give the accurate direction for self-realization in eternal relationship with the Personality of Godhead by devotional service and transcendental love. Only the Bhagavatam, and nothing but the Bhagavatam, can directly and accurately guide us to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No amount of demigod worship, no amount of mental speculation, no amount of fruitive activities can do that. Only Nitya Bhagavata Sevaya. That will be our saving grace. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. So we'll finish there. If there's any questions or comments, we'll try and take those, even if they're coming from outside, if we've got that arrangement.
Knowing what I heard from you and from Bhagavatam today, if I go to Srirangam and they do not have that kind of conviction or respect to Bhagavatam, they have for Vishnu Purana. And if they say, please say something, what do you want me to say?
First of all, I'd never be so foolish as to instruct you what to say. You've forgotten more than I'll ever know. Second of all, this is the eternal spiritual conflict between the two different followers of the Vedic principles, those that worship Vishnu and those that worship Krishna. All we can do is quote Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Gopi Bhartu Padakamalayo Dasa 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 Dasa. That's all we can do. We're not looking to prove supremacy or dismiss anyone. Mahaprabhu had extended debates with Venkat Bhatta over this exact same principle. So we'll leave that high philosophical discussion to persons qualified. Did I sidestep that sufficiently for you?
He literally told him that Karma Gyan in Tumar Sampradaya Yuchin. I see these two symptoms in your Sampradaya, that you think the liberation is the highest goal of life, is Gyan, and the Karma is prominent. So, how to understand what is the ultimate goal? I mean, Mahaprabhu did point out, but in our case,
yeah, I'm not qualified to speak, you know, on such a subject as that. Two such persons as the exalted Brahmin priests that are serving in Sri Rangam. I have no qualifications. Anyone else?
Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's famous quote, If all the literature in the world, except Srimad Bhagavatam, were burnt to ashes, there would be no law. So that's my answer. Just say, ask Bhakti Siddhanta.
There you go. There you go. Yes, Mata? Question over here. Yeah.
Krishna, it's something I'm more recent. I had a question like how to learn how to ask proper questions in a proper mood and to be able to act on those answers afterwards.
How to ask proper questions,
yeah.
And the mood of those questions. Well, first of all, we have to know what it is we're desiring to achieve. We have to know what is the goal we're looking for before we can ask questions how to get there. If I'm trying to get to New York City and I ask somebody for directions, the first thing they're going to say, well, where are you going? Well, I don't know, I'm just going somewhere up there. Well, just take any road, go up there. No, I'm going specifically to New York City. Okay, take 95 all the way up the coast, you land right there. So we have to know what we're trying to achieve before we can know what questions to ask about how to achieve that. Excuse me. That indication is there from reading Prabhupada's books. That gives us a clear understanding as to the direction we're trying to achieve. And then, particularly a purport like this or a chapter like this, the mood of how to ask those questions is there. You know, the instruction that Narada gives is directly related to the previous chapter's despondency that Vyasadeva is manifesting. You know, he understood that, you know, satisfaction with presenting the Vedic literatures is the goal. I've got here and I've done it, but I haven't been satisfied. So what's the mistake? So then Narada had the opportunity to step in and say, well, you forgot to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as we'll find out over these next few verses. So before we can have the idea of what question to ask, we have to know where we're going.
If I know that I don't have that proper state of mind maybe at that time, I might try to prepare myself. So many times I take too long to prepare. You know, and then at the end I just don't ask any questions, you know. So I might have questions more often than I ask, you know, or I wait till the end, you know, just because I think, oh, there's much of false ego, you know, maybe my question, so I kind of remain in my mind just, you know, thinking if I'm going to ask it in the right manner or not, and then at the end I just don't ask. So this way I learn less,
yeah,
as well than I could. Maybe by
reading, reading, reading. This is how the questions of the mind become dealt with. And writing down as we go along. Most people that seriously study, seriously read, they keep a pen and paper close at hand. I mean, that's old school pen and paper. Maybe it's a, you know, tablet now, whatever it is. But they keep some arrangement to, okay, wait a minute, here, these questions here. And then when they're finished with that reading, go back and examine those questions. A, has it been answered by the successive points that I've read? Or B, is this something I need to present to someone else? Because now I've read something, I've got a question in regards to that subject matter. So that's one very helpful way. Reading and keeping a pen and paper close at hand and making notes on that. Okay, here's things that I want cleared up. And then, of course, understanding who to approach. Understanding who to approach to get that cleared up. So these are all parts of the process of advancing devotional service.
Also,
just as a side note, for everybody at home wondering about all my coughing, oh my God, he's dying. No, it's the allergies. I get it since I've been 12 years old every year at this time, and I'm just drinking lots of water because when I talk, it strains my voice. There you go. Just so you know, I'm not dying here. Of course, I'm right in front of Radhe Shyama, the Vaishnava. This will be better. All right. So we'll finish there today. Srimad Bhagavatam class. Ki Jai.